Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're about to have a conversation with Marian Jansen from the International Labor Organization. We're facing a crisis here in the economy of America, but it's not just America. The world is facing this crisis, perhaps one of the world's crises we've faced in many, many, many years, and one that is very critical. So we are happy to have her. She joins us this evening from Geneva, Switzerland, and her home there. And Marian Jansen, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk to you and to your audience.
We're looking forward to all you joining us here at 410-319-8888. We're broadcasting here at WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community here in Baltimore, Maryland, at Morgan State University's campus, and, of course, broadcasting across the nation and the globe on Free Speech TV and streaming live at steinershow.org. And so until we get a new 800 number system set up, you can join us here on your cell phone toll-free at 410-319-8888 from across America, or locally. Just join us here as well. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. And again, thank you. It's great to have you with us. I appreciate you staying up so late for us in Geneva.
Yep, indeed. It's after midnight here.
So before we begin, and I do want to talk about this in terms of this global crisis and what happened at G20 and the work that you do. But first, I think a lot of our listeners, probably because we don't study civics as much in our school systems as we should, don't even know what the International Labor Organization does and even ever heard of the ILO and think of a labor union, but you're not. So talk for just a second about what the ILO is.
Well, the ILO is an international agency that belongs to the UN family. We have a very large membership. 183 countries are our members. And of these countries, it's not only government representatives that are members here, but also employer and worker representatives. We are therefore what we call a tripartite institution, where different voices within one country actually have a voice, different parts of the country. So employers, workers, and governments are represented at our important meetings and can give their opinions. The area we work on is labor related. We like to discuss our work around what we call the four pillars of decent work. The ILO works towards promoting rights at work, rights at the workplace. It works towards encouraging opportunities for employment, at enhancing social protection, and at strengthening the dialogue on work-related issues, in particular the dialogue between workers and employers.
I think that when we look at what's going on here in America, and then you look around the world, that this is the economic crisis we're facing on the planet right now is really of global proportions. That it really is probably at its most tentative state since before World War II. I mean, I think that the urgency of this for just security on the planet and peace on the planet is something we don't often think about.
Yes, this crisis has indeed had a very dramatic impact globally. I think the strongest impact globally was felt rather last year than this year, and it took the form of this strong financial instability and of this immense drop in trade, something we hadn't seen for decades, had never seen probably. So businesses all over the world suddenly either couldn't get credits anymore or were not able to sell their products anymore because there was no demand among the customers they were normally selling to. And that had then, of course, an effect on employment. So we saw employment growth go down in all world regions. In some regions, this turned into actually negative employment growth in the sense that unemployment went down. Overall, so it has been the industrialized world and some former Soviet Union countries that have been most hardly hit at the employment level.
But we're also seeing countries like Ireland, Portugal, Greece, perhaps Spain, all having problems, and literally people worrying about the economies falling apart, the social underpinnings of those nations falling apart. We're seeing the crisis in France over the future of the economy and how the government plans the economy, that works the economy in Britain, riots over rising tuition rates and more, cutting unemployment insurance. I mean, this is in the Western world, I mean, the crisis seems pretty severe, and in developing countries, it's even worse, where there are no social safety nets.
Yes, indeed, all the examples you mentioned of countries where there it's serious instability right now, or serious recession, or even concern about depression, are in the Western world. You mentioned a number of European countries. The countries you mentioned are all characterized by the fact that they were either hit by the bursting of a housing bubble, or they were hit by the problems in the financial system, or maybe both. The U.S. Had problems on both sides. The developing world and emerging world has been less exposed to the financial sector problem and has had less problems of the type of housing bubble burst. They have been hit by the trade shock, and that has created problems. They were probably of a shorter nature than the ones we are experiencing in Europe, many European countries, and in the United States. But indeed, losing a job in a developing country is likely to have to lead to much bigger hardship than losing a job in the United States, in France, or in the UK. Indeed, because, as you mentioned, there is no social protection. So you lose your job in an African economy, in many Asian economies, you probably do not get unemployment benefits, you probably do not have a health insurance, you probably don't have savings that you can rely on because you never earned enough to save anything, and then losing the job can be life-threatening.
Which is why I think most people don't think about it often. We think about the issue of immigration and emigration, which is a global issue. I mean, people think of it here in America because of the Latino people coming across the border through Mexico, from Central America and South America. But in Europe, it's many people from African and Arab nations coming forth. Even in places like Saudi Arabia, they worry about Yemenites coming in to look for work. I mean, the issue of poverty and unemployment around the globe and lack of work around the globe is really severe. I mean, and I think that the magnitude of it is what we don't really get.
Yes, indeed, many of the phenomena you mentioned, like the migration phenomenon, it's not just a U.S. phenomenon. The situation on the migration front during the crisis has differed across regions and across individuals, basically. We have seen some poor countries sending more people into the rich world, hoping that they would find a job there. On the other hand, we have seen immigrants going back to their home countries because they lost a job in the industrialized countries. Some immigrants have started to send more money back home because at home in the poorer country the situation was so bad. Other immigrants had lost their job and were sending less money home to the home country, creating in this way additional hardship in their home country. So indeed, these immigration patterns exist in different areas of the world, and my immigration patterns, but also the flow of money from migrants into their home countries has also been affected by the crisis.
So can you, I know that the International Labour Organization made many recommendations to the G20, and the G20 kind of ended on a whimper at best. And I wonder if you could explain from your perspective what happened there. Why the nations of the planet are in such disagreement about what to do?
I think that there is a recognition of there being a problem. I think that the most urgent problem nations see are currently at the monetary front and in the international financial system. And I would agree to that it's important to fix those problems, because the least we need is a breakdown of the global financial system. We were close to that in 2008, and I personally think that we can get close to that again. That would be a bad thing. So the lot of the effort was put into discussing what's going on the monetary side. That has been linked to the deficit discussion. There is this feeling that not a lot of progress has been made. Maybe that's true. I think it's important that people stay at the table, continue to talk to each other, and maybe the solution that is needed would be one where a number of important players would have to pay a price they consider significant, and that's typically a difficult thing that takes time.
So talk about the kind of recommendations that you made and that which you've been writing about for the G20. I mean, I'm curious what you think we have to do. I mean, when we look at what is going on around the globe here in this country or anywhere else, that what seems to be happening is that what social underpinning there is in societies, whether it is in Nigeria or Greece or France or United States or anywhere else, is what's being cut, is what's being undermined, and it's kind of rampant. That the only way that the world seems to see to be able to change is through some austerity programs that hit kind of the poorest among us. Is that the only way we can resolve this?
Well, on these issues, I think the summit document reflects different views and therefore maybe not clear guidance. The issue of the need to reduce deficits is in the document, but the need for building strong social protection systems is also an explicit element of the summit document. And I think on the ILO side, we are quite happy that issue has been so prominently mentioned, that it has been put forward as an area of work for the future of the G20, because that is an issue that is very much at the heart of ILO's work. What I also found interesting, that the topic of growth comes repeatedly up as the need for not just being growth, but for being sustainable and balanced growth. So the idea that growth alone is not enough anymore, that we are worried that it's not sustainable and that we must make sure that it's balanced in the sense that enough people can take part in it, it's there in the document. So compared to previous documents, I think I would not be alone to have the impression that there is some type of progress. But indeed, right now it's just an objective, an aim. We should strengthen social protection. There's not much, there's a blueprint of how to do that. At the same time, financial markets continue to put pressure on national economies, and which has as a result that governments feel obliged to reduce deficits, and which has resulted in many countries in pressure on spending for social protection.
Now, I think you probably put the finger on the pulse of what's going on. Is the pressure being put on many nations of the world by the financial markets that they are kind of navigating the ship in many ways, though different countries are seeing that this ship should be navigated in different ways. You know, we saw that clearly when the G20 left and there was no real agreement between countries in the world on how to address the economic crisis we face.
Sorry, I didn't get that last point.
And that when G20 ended, the leaders kind of walked away without any kind of understanding among one another, on how to resolve the economic crisis that we face.
Yeah, I think I think there is an understanding that there needs to be global collaboration to solve this monetary financial issues. That's already a good thing. Now they actually have to manage to solve these problems. But I think that this is the most urgent issue and therefore an important one. It will not solve some of the longer term problems that have been building up already before the crisis. So the lack of social protection in many countries, but also the increasing inequality within countries, within many countries, in the developing world, in the rich country, in the rich world, and the U.S. is an example of this. This is a phenomenon we have observed. Many observers think that it has contributed to creating the crisis, and there are people who believe that globalization cannot be sustainable without attacking within country inequality. Now, I think what we see right now in the document, in the summit document, is maybe an increasing awareness that this is an issue, that labor market, social protection, maybe inequality are an issue. There is, I think, not much explicit acknowledgement that maybe more international collaboration on these issues is necessary in order to actually solve the problems. So that's a stage that is still needed. And then once you've reached that stage, then we will need the stage of actually designing the actual precise policies.
I wonder how we get to the place you're talking about. I mean, the idea that the ILO has written about, and some things you've written, other people have written about globalization becoming sustainable. Some people think that's antithetical. Some people think that's almost a contradiction in terms, that globalization can be sustainable, given that some people think it leads to exploitation or the destroying of industrial markets from one country to the other, environmental issues kind of being thrown aside. I mean, how do you see, from your report, what you think about globalization as sustainable? What does that mean? How do you make those things palpable for people?
I think for globalization to be sustainable from a social point of view, I'm now looking at the labor market side, not, for instance, at environmental issues. What we have to reach is a situation where at least a majority of people thinks it's getting better off with globalization, because that would lead then to a situation where a majority of people in democratic societies votes in favor of globalization, of trade liberalization, for instance. If that is that we haven't reached that point, or if we are not in that situation, then at some stage pressure will increase for more protectionism, and we are probably right now in a situation where that's going on. There is pressure in many countries not to continue liberalizing and maybe increase protectionism or manipulate. Do something about your exchange rates in order to become more competitive. So there is pressure to artificially manipulate trade flows. Now, business is aware of this, and business is also scared of this.
Mm-hmm.
What we need to reach is a situation where a strong enough coalition is reached of players at different sides of the table to say we have to do something about this. We have to reach a situation where a large part of countries' populations gets better off from globalization, which means their wages increase, their incomes increase, and if they're hit by a shock, they are somehow protected. They have health insurance, they have maybe they have unemployment benefits. And we want to ensure this, and we must make sure that a system is in place to guarantee that people receive this kind of services or receive acceptable incomes. But indeed, you need a strong enough coalition in individual, at first in individual countries, and probably even at a global level, to set up systems that can generate this.
And I think, I mean, and the detail of that, therein lies the rub. I mean, is how we get to that place I think we just saw from our last half an hour's discussion that countries are always going to be fueled by their own national interest. We're watching Europe right now in the throes of wondering whether this whole idea of letting the euro be the dominant currency for Europe is working. And looking at what's happened to Greece, in Ireland, Portugal, Spain may be next. To get to that point is a real leap of faith for most people in the world.
It's a leap of faith that people in the world have already done in the past. For instance, organizations like the WTO exist, and organizations like the WTO set rules for international trade that oblige governments that governments who trade with each other and who are members of the WTO are supposed to stick to. And these rules are there, for instance, to avoid that governments do policies that are in their own interest but hurt others. There are, for instance, rules on what kind of subsidies you can give to your own producers. And those subsidies should, for instance, be designed in such a way that they do not hurt others. So we have, in certain contexts, seen governments, countries get together and agree that it's better for them to agree on a common set of rules rather than going on hurting each other, which is at the end was for everybody involved, that we call it the prisoner's dilemma. I think that maybe it's one should think about getting together at the global level to discuss other issues internationally. For instance, issues of how can we make sure that we can all tax those who win from globalization, get from the winners from globalization, and let money flow to the losers from globalization, either through social protection systems or through other types of redistribution schemes. Or should we sit together on some light and agree on some lighter form of monitoring, that we all make public what is going on in inequality in our countries, and we try to agree that we keep control over the dispersion of incomes in our country. I think it's time to think further, to think that also on issues concerning the labor market, concerning social protection, we need stronger collaboration at the international level. Now, at the ILO, a lot of that is going on, but the ILO explicitly only works directly on the social protection side. It does not work on trade issues explicitly, and not on macro issues explicitly. Other organizations do this. Now, what we have been seeing in the recent months is that there's increased collaboration between institutions like the ILO and the IMF, like the ILO and the WTO. That collaboration existed before. And I think this also shows maybe a trend that there's willingness to search how the different fields fit together and what kind of interaction needs to take place at the global level in order to set rules that fit and that are coherent, that do not only work for the enterprises that are trading, for the financial sector, but that also work for the people who have a job and live from their wages.
Dr. Marian Jensen, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. I look forward to talking to you again. Thank you so much, and thank you for staying awake for us in Geneva, Switzerland.
Thank you, Mark.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, bye.
Perspective from the International Labor Organization. I want to remind you that support for WEAA is provided by Chef Max Louisiana Cuisine, available for catering for all holiday parties and special occasions. Open Monday through Thursday, 12 to 8 p.m. Fridays and Saturdays, 12 to 9 p.m. Located at 4311 Hartford Road, 319-6227. That's 410-319-6227. And support for WEAA is also provided by Baltimore for Healthy Babies. Far too many babies in Baltimore City die before their first birthdays because they're not sleeping safe. Your babies should always sleep safe, alone on their back in a crib. HealthyBabiesBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justine Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered tonight by Brian Boone. Our interns have been Daniel Gillespie, Shari Barnes, and Jacob Mendelson. Our theme music tonight is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and information about all of our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. While you're there, let us know what kind of shows you want. Send us your video and audio tapes. We'd like to see what you're working on. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, and for Free Speech TV, where you get the news you'll get nowhere else, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.